Have people asked you for loans? No, but Francesca and I, we're the ones who can offer now. And as soon as we can, we're going to renovate Mario's apartment and move in. We haven't started yet, though it's still the way it was when Mario lived in it, except that the papers and the books have been taken away to be sorted. Had either you or Francesca seen Mario's apartment before he died? We didn't even know where he lived. I went there for the first time with Christina and the police. The door was chained shut. We had to be let in by the officer. We found a gift for Anna inside and some money, but the apartment was a mess. Books were everywhere and stuff was piled up and lying around. It was disturbing. Have you read any of Mario's poetry? I've never been a great reader. When I walked to school, I used to pass the saint in the wall in Calebembo and put a coin in the box so I wouldn't get a failing grade. But I did read the poem about Anna. It was something serious. Then I recorded some of Mario's stuff on TV. What did you think about all that speculation over Mario's suicide and his will and your part in it? I was really angry. People were saying I forced him to write his will and that I was having an affair with him. That shit really got to me. I wanted to answer back, but everybody told me not to, because then it would only be in the Gazzettino again. Of course. And who are those people? They're supposed to be Mario's good friends, but they were standing up in public saying terrible things about him, that he was paying for sex and playing dangerous sex games. In the end, what I discovered about Mario was that he was everyone's friend, and at the same time, no one's friend. What about the threats written with the blue felt-tip marker on Albert Gardin's window? Why would I do something crazy like that? One of those things even appeared when I was up in the mountains. At Campo San Giacomo, we waited for Francesca and Anna. Then the four of us went up to Stephanie's apartment. At the top of a steep flight of stone steps, a pair of heavy wooden doors opened on a scene of musty gloom. The apartment had high ceilings, tall windows, heavy oak furniture, and wallpaper that was stained and peeling. Framed pictures, including several pen and ink portraits of Stephanie, were hung haphazardly on the walls. We walked from room to room. "Anna, look," said Francesca. "Whose apartment is this? You know who? Uncle Mario." It crossed my mind that these evocations of Uncle Mario might have been meant as much for my ears as Anna's. Nicola was a lucky fruit and vegetable dealer. That much was certain. But his million-dollar windfall had come at a price. The lingering suspicion that he had earned it through some secret, nefarious dealings that he and his family would forever be at pains to deny. In the kitchen, I looked at the narrow stairs leading up to the attic, and at the wooden railing where Stephanie had tied the rope that had choked him to death. A poster taped to the wall halfway up the stairs showed two young, light-hearted soldiers kissing. It was captioned, "Make love, not war." "We haven't started working on renovating it yet," said Nicola. "We'd never sell this apartment. It's Mario's." We came into the dining room. On a sideboard, I noticed a glass sculpture that appeared at first to be in the shape of a plant, but upon taking a closer look, I saw it was a phallus. Next to it was another phallus-shaped object, this one made of marble. On the floor, there was a box that contained a variety of penises, more in the nature of tawdry jokes than pornography. Penis candles with wicks coming out the end, clay penises fashioned into pipe smokers' pipes, salt shaker penises, ceramic penises lying in ceramic ashtrays, door knocker penises. "I guess these objects aren't going to be included in Mario's permanent archives," I said to Nicola. His laugh was light, easy, and, as far as I could tell, completely genuine.